Good morning. This remote hearing of the Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee is called to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Lone.
Present.
Vice Chair Akam.
Present.
Minority Lead Swazinski. Minority Lead Swazinski. Representative Bierman.
Bierman present.
Representative Bo.
Swazinski present, sorry.
Swazinski present. Representative Bo.
Bo present.
Representative Christensen. Representative Franson. Representative Franson.
Present.
Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hornstein.
Present.
Representative Igo.
Igo present.
Representative Lee.
Lee present.
Representative Lippert.
Lippert present.
Representative Lislegaard.
Lislegaard present.
Representative Mecklund.
Mecklund present.
Representative Munson.
Munson present.
Representative Stevenson. Representative Stevenson.
We do have a quorum, so we will go ahead and get started. We have four bills on the docket for today for our first hearing of first deadline week. And so it'll be solar today in the Energy Committee. And the first bill we have up is Representative Ryer's bill, House File 4404. I will move House File 4404 be laid over for possible inclusion. My understanding, Representative Ryer, is you have an author's amendment, A1, to get the bill in the shape you would like. Any comments you'd like to make to A1 before I move it?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's just move it to get it in shape.
Okay. Any discussion to the A1? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The A1 is adopted. Representative Ryer, your bill is before us in the shape you would like. Please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. I'm proud to introduce House File 4404. It's a bill that establishes a $25 million grant program to fund the addition of solar panels to public buildings. This bill is part of the Comprehensive Climate Action Plan, a science-based approach to addressing the climate crisis, lowering energy costs, creating jobs and economic opportunity, making sure our state is a great place to live and work for current and future generations of Minnesotans. This grant program will be funded by the Renewable Development Account and the General Fund, and the program will be administered by the Department of Commerce. We're in a moment in history where we need to have everyone take action to combat climate change. As a state, we have the opportunity to help communities do their part without having to find space in their constrained budgets. We do this by providing grants to solar panels to install solar panels on local public buildings, towns, cities, counties. Think of the variety of public structures this includes: community centers, wastewater treatment plants, airports, and libraries. It's a statewide program as likely to help Kandy, Ojai County as my own Dakota County. Solar on buildings brings tangible benefits. In a close-to-home example, the apartment building where we live has a solar panel installation. Solar provides power to all our common spaces with some to spare. We can enjoy these benefits on our public buildings too. Our communities are looking ahead to a sustainable future. In Eagan, redevelopment of the police station included a roof built to accommodate solar in the future. They're ready for this. Let's take a small amount of our very large forecast surplus to help Minnesota's communities move forward. I'd like to turn it over now to our testifiers to talk more about the program and its benefits. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Absolutely. We'll begin with Logan O'Grady. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Logan O'Grady. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association. For those unfamiliar with MNSEA, we are a 501c6 trade organization made up of over 140 diverse companies who employ over 4,500 Minnesotans statewide. MNSEA works to move Minnesota solar forward through pro-business, pro-job growth, and pro-economic development policies that enable our member businesses to meet payroll, grow long-term in our communities, and hire more Minnesotans in family-sustaining jobs. Our members compete in a 50-state marketplace, and it is Mencia's goal to encourage as many private companies to choose Minnesota over anywhere else to do business. I want to thank Representative Ryer for authoring this innovative bill that supports job growth by placing Minnesota at a competitive advantage over other states in our region and in the country. The Solar for Public Buildings Grant Program, as proposed in HF 4404, is a true public-private partnership that provides certainty to the solar industry. Much like the bipartisan and highly popular Solar for Schools program passed last year, solar on public buildings will lower utility bills for local governments and save taxpayers money while simultaneously creating new jobs and opportunities for Minnesota laborers. We also commend Representative Ryer and this committee for requiring that any project funded from this new program is subject to the state's prevailing wage. Mencia is proud to work with our labor members, including IBEW, to create jobs that are filled by skilled laborers and ensure safety and reliability while increasing productivity and training the workers of the future. Overall, this bill represents a strong commitment to Minnesota's solar industry, our member companies, and our workers. Mencia encourages all members of this committee to support this bill and the positive economic impacts it creates for our state. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Happy to stick around for any questions.
Thank you so much. Next, we are hearing from Isabel Ricker. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Long and members of the committee. My name is Isabel Ricker, and I'm here on behalf of Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy is a nonpartisan Minnesota-based nonprofit organization working to advance clean energy policy that works for all Minnesotans. We appreciate the opportunity to share our support for Representative Ryer's proposal this morning to advance solar energy projects serving local governments across our state. Over the past decade, solar energy has become one of the very cheapest ways to produce electricity in Minnesota. Utilities and corporations are investing heavily in solar and seeing the financial benefits of shifting to this clean energy resource. Representative Ryer's proposal will support local governments interested in developing solar projects on their public facilities through both financial and technical assistance. It will also help local governments take advantage of energy conservation measures to maximize their cost savings. Solar is an effective tool for local governments looking to save taxpayer dollars over a long period of time. Solar produces electricity with zero fuel cost and nearly zero maintenance cost for at least 25 to 35 years. These are long-term cost-saving measures that benefit local government budgets, services available to residents, as well as the environment. This proposal builds on the success of other programs like Solar for Schools, as Mr. O'Grady said, and will ensure that all types of public facilities have the opportunity to access the financial benefits of solar energy while helping to scale the environmental and economic development benefits of clean energy for our state. Thank you again for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much. Next, we will hear from Dr. Kate Knuth. Welcome back to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm really glad to be here today. My name is Kate Knuth, and I'm glad to be here today to speak in support of House File 4404 and grateful to Representative Ryer for bringing this bill forward. I'm a policy and research consultant with the 100% campaign, and we work with a large coalition of organizations to bring about a more just climate and clean energy future. I recently, doing work with the campaign, completed a review of city climate action plans, which your committee heard about last week, and talked more in depth. I wanted to focus down a little bit on some of the things we saw in that review that are, I think, very relevant to this bill. Reducing city operations emissions is a widespread strategy among city climate action plans and local government climate action planning, and including solar on public buildings is an essential tactic of reducing city operations greenhouse gas emissions. Cities are at different stages of this work, but there is very clearly still significant demand for solar on public buildings, whether it's cities, whether it's counties, or other levels of local government. Some tangible examples, you can kind of see how this work is proceeding in Red Wing. The city has invested in 4 solar arrays that provide energy cost savings to 6 of their public buildings and provide about 3.6% of the city's overall energy consumption. In Northfield, the Climate Action Plan includes solar on city buildings, and they have actually already completed a solar potential assessment for which city buildings and at what levels is possible there, but still have work to do to actually build and install these solar installations. In the city of Duluth, which has the most recent city climate action plan in the state, their climate action work plan includes assessing the solar potential of on-site renewables for city operations, and on-site renewables obviously includes solar, exactly like described in Representative Ryer's bill. So I think it's very clear that cities and counties and other local governments across the state are interested. They're already starting to do the kind of groundwork to make progress on local renewables, including solar. And I think the opportunity to make this investment at such an essential time for our state's economy, our clean energy economy, as well as such an important time for addressing the climate crisis, it just makes a lot of sense to invest in cost-saving measures that improve our climate and put Minnesotans across the state to work. And so I'm really excited about House File 4404, and hope the committee will include it in their budget bill, and happy to stand for any questions if members have them.
Thank you so much. Finally, we will hear from Egan Councilmember Mike Sapino. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Mike Sapino. I'm a registered architect and lead accredited professional. I'm also a council member with the City of Egan, although I'm testifying in favor of HF 4404 today as a private citizen and not representing the official position of the City of Egan. In recent years, nearly every impediment to widespread conversion to solar energy has been overcome. Solar panels are now cost competitive with fossil fuel energy generation. The impacts of climate change caused by fossil fuel combustion is now undeniable. As more private homes install solar panels, public acceptance has become the norm. The only remaining impediment is the capital investment for the initial installation. That's why HF 4404 is such an important bill. Solar energy generation should be standard on any new public building in Minnesota that has favorable solar exposure. But the long-term benefits of solar power are often superseded by more immediate concerns once local governments start making tough decisions about budget priorities. It doesn't need to be that way. Governments own their facilities long enough to realize a return on investment. I would love to see Egan install solar panels on our public buildings, but I would love even more to see smaller cities in outstate Minnesota have that opportunity, which without state assistance could be prohibitively costly addition to their smaller budgets. If state government truly wants to reduce our carbon footprint, it needs to lead by example. We've developed the technology to harness solar energy cleanly and cheaply. All we need now is the political will to make the investment. We can do this. Thanks so much for listening. And I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you so much, Councilmember Sapina. We do have a couple of questions. I just wanted to first thank Representative Ryer for bringing this bill forward and note that it's modeled closely on the successful Solar on Schools program, which we heard about recently. And so it has a number of similar constraints and requirements for the Department of Commerce to manage. So it does, I think, align really well with a program that we've seen work well and reduce costs for other public programs. So with that, we'll go to member questions. Representative Spasinski.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for Dr. Knuth. Is she available for a question?
She sure is.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Knuth. You mentioned a couple other cities that are already moving forward and putting solar on their buildings. How did they fund their projects?
Dr. Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The city of Northfield is the one that I mentioned in terms of that actually has solar projects that have moved forward. I have not looked in depth in how the project was funded. So I would have to get back to the member on that. in terms of the planning, the city of, Red Wing had the installation. The city of Northfield has done solar potential planning. They were able to get some grant funding from the MPCA Environmental Assistance Grants to help them figure out the solar potential of their city buildings. And then Duluth with their climate action plan is even earlier in the process than that. So there's an array of ways to finance these things, but I think the benefit of the state investing in the capital costs of solar will allow more cities, will allow cities with smaller budgets, and will help stabilize city budgets with energy costs, cities that have been dealing with the impacts of COVID and a pandemic. And so we'll be able to help stabilize the budgets going forward.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then my follow-up is to Representative Ryerson. You mentioned or in your testimony that this will help save taxpayer money if we do this. Is there written in the bill that property taxes will either go down or, you know, so if there's, you know, rather the money being spent on utility bills to Xcel or to a local cooperative, and instead they're generating their own, is it written in your bill that the property taxes will go down for those city people that live in those cities if this is built?
Representative Ryer. Looks like you're on mute, Representative Ryer.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I don't believe I commented specifically on savings. I believe that was one of the other testifiers. Nonetheless, I'll reply, there is nothing built into the bill that requires or guarantees any type of property tax savings.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is Representative Ryerson, have the...
It's Representative Ryer, Representative Swazinski.
Thank you.
Oh, Ryer, oh, sorry. is the, have the cities commented on this? I guess I was in and out, had a little connection problem. Like League of Minnesota Cities, Coalition of Minnesotas, have they taken a position on your bill?
Representative Ryer.
They have not.
Okay.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Ms. And then just what is the plan for, you know, obviously when these things go bad, will the state be responsible? Will we see a lot of bonding requests come to help replace these in the future? Like, what's your vision 20 years from now? Like, when the state of Minnesota builds a new roof on something, we usually see folks coming back to help the state fix that roof. You know, if we're funding solar panels, are we going to continue to have to replace these over the years, or what's that? How does that process look like?
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. There is no requirement or expectation in the bill that the state has any ongoing responsibility at all. It's simply a grant for the installation and purchase. And so, you know, I don't see that being a factor any more than we would expect to see a local business or a local public building come to us now. There's nothing at all implied in the language that suggests that.
Thank you, Representative Breyer. Yes, briefly, Representative Swazinski.
Would you be open to, you know, putting some clarifying language in the bill that would just, you know, just make sure that the cities realize they're on their own after these are built? And then also from a cost perspective, you know, I've read articles to say when prevailing wage is used in projects like this, oftentimes it negates the amount of the grant because of the increased cost. We've seen that in housing projects. We've seen that in other areas. Is that going to hold true with these projects that essentially the city, if it just went out and bid it locally, would get a bid in, get it built, but the amount of the grant simply request, you know, reflects the increased cost of by using prevailing wage. Is that true in this area as well?
Representative Ryer, and then we're going to have to keep moving with to get through our questions. Go ahead, Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. You had 2 points. One is building owners are already responsible for disposing of solar panels. So if the public unit of government owns the building, is still responsible. I think I see that just as repetitive and duplicative in the language. So prefer not to entertain that idea. And when it comes to the prevailing wage, I will never be anything but a staunch supporter of paying a living wage and standing by workers. So I think that it's better to have the grant reflect the cost of looking out for the workers. And so whether or not it affects costs, I think that we need to do the right thing in bidding our projects.
Thank you, Representative Ryer. We have four hands and an amendment, so if we could move through our questions quickly. Representative Bacon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will be brief. I just want to thank the author.
I'm sorry, I have a vote.
Oh, go ahead, thank Representative Ryer. Well, if it's a statement, Representative Bacon, maybe you can make that on the record and then.
Happy to do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the author for bringing forward this bill. And I think that, you know, the success of the Solar on Schools program, this is a great way to take it and apply it in another way. And when we can come up with win-win situations like this that not only save taxpayer dollars as well as improve the environment, that's a good thing. And to Representative Swazinski's comment about how to ensure that or how to use the tax savings, I really think local control is important, and cities and local units of government should decide how to best use the resources that are saved from their energy costs and using the solar. So my thank you to Representative Ryer for bringing this bill forward, and I appreciate the time today, Mr.
Chair. Thank you, Representative Bacon. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This may be a question for Mr. O'Grady. You know, we spoke last week about the potential of integrating solar on buildings with electric vehicle charging stations. And I wonder if you could maybe elaborate on this and, you know, the potential for it, because I think it's really important. It kind of combines a couple of our goals with electrification of the transportation system, as well as the overall benefits of solar on public buildings. So I thought that was really intriguing and be, I think, helpful to share with others your insights on that.
Mr. O'Grady.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hornstein, for the question. I will say MNSEA, as the state solar trade organization, we tried to stay in our lane a little bit. So we haven't fully dabbled into the electric vehicle discussion. However, it becomes relevant to our members when we use charging stations powered by solar. So we've been looking at that. I know there's some money in the federal infrastructure bill for that. So we're looking at how we can use that money and leverage money here in Minnesota for that. So I would love to incorporate solar for EV charging stations on public buildings as well.
Representative Hornstein.
No, thank you. I think it's again, very helpful. I've seen this in a couple of different instances, and it's a way to combine several of our goals at once.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question today is for the bill author, Representative Ryer. So I'm glad, first off, I'm glad you add that amendment that added prevailing wage. I think that's a really good thing to add to bills like this. It's fantastic. But my concern when we go a little deeper on is, if we're going to have prevailing wage for these grants and how we use them, are we at all concerned that these solar panels that are being used are coming from places that have no labor standards, no environmental standards? And I just, my question to you is, can we have something like this in the bill? Because if we're going to go to a state level, right, and we're going to use state money to incentivize solar panel installation on public buildings, we're using taxpayer dollars. And I just want to make sure Minnesotan taxpayers know that they're going to be using materials and products that come on the backs of those that don't have prevailing wage and don't have environmental standards.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Igo. Of course, that is a problem that we're facing across our industries. And of course, like other people in our country and other people in business and people in government, this is a serious issue to me. I know that there's a lot of work going on at the federal level, which was where this needs to be addressed at an international level. There's a lot of work going on with the national solar organizations and President Biden, for example. So I'm committed to standing for that and advocating for that on behalf of our state to the extent I can. But I would also argue that it's an issue for our computers, for our cell phones, and it's simply a challenge that we have to take on at a more a broader level, and I appreciate you raising the concern.
Representative Michael.
You know, thank you for that response, and I'm just going to follow up and say, you know, when we're talking about these state policy decisions and we're going to influence supply and demand by these policy decisions and influencing money, that's not how we're going to make this problem better. Making the problem better is standing up against the supply and demand and making sure that the supply is coming from the United States, not increasing the demand for places around the world. Thank you.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, Mr. Chair, when am I offering my amendment?
Well, why don't you do it right now? I think that would be a perfect time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, my amendment basically would add to the policy, similar to what Lead Swedinsky talked about, is that a local unit of government awarded a grant under this section is responsible for the cost of removing the solar energy system from the public building or it's an adjacent, which is it installed, when it reaches the end of its useful life. They have to do it in an environmentally responsible fashion. What I find, Mr. Chair and members, is that I have a lot of concern if we're not clear on this. There's going to be a lot of pointing fingers at who's responsible. And I think it's going to cost millions and millions of dollars to clean these up down the road. And I just think it's prudent for us to put that in there to avoid the finger pointing, and then also to avoid potential lawsuits down the road. So we're clear who's responsible, so that the local unit of government knows that they're going to be responsible for cleaning this up and disposing of it. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would ask for a roll call.
Representative Grunhagen moves the A2 and requests a roll call. Representative Ryer, would you like to respond to the A2 amendment?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Grunhagen, for bringing this forward. Members, I would ask you to oppose this amendment. There are a couple of grounds. One, I've already mentioned that the building owners are already responsible for disposing of solar panels. So this just becomes duplication and unneeded complexity. The other thing is that it forecloses options that could emerge in the future related to recycling, contracting with another organization, with the developer. So I think that closing our doors to what we could do is not a good idea. Again, I ask you to oppose the amendment.
Seeing no further hands and a roll call having been requested, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Long.
No.
Vice Chair Akam.
No.
Minority Lead Swedinsky.
Yes.
Representative Bierman.
Bierman, no.
Representative Bowe.
Bowe votes aye.
Representative Christensen.
No.
Representative Franson. Representative Franson.
Franson, yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
Yes.
Representative Hollins.
No.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Igo.
Igo, aye.
Representative Lee.
Lee, no.
Representative Lipperts.
Lippert, no.
Representative Lislegard.
No.
Representative Mecklens.
Mecklen, aye.
Representative Munson.
Munson, aye.
Representative Stevenson.
No.
There being 7 ayes and 10 noes, the amendment is not adopted. There are no further amendments. Representative Ryer, any closing comments to your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll keep it short. I want to thank you for the discussion of the important issues related to this. We don't have time to wait when it comes to climate change, and we need to take all of the different directions we can. This is one important tool that we're providing to people in our government who want to take, or in our local government who want to take advantage of it. Let's give them the tools. Thank you for including it in consideration.
Thank you so much, Representative Ryer. I'll renew my motion that House File 4404 be laid over, and the bill is laid over. Next, I am presenting two bills, so I will turn the virtual gavel over to Vice Chair Akam.
Thank you. Second bill that we have on the agenda is House File 4402. Representative Long, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I'll move that House File 4402 be laid over for possible inclusion, and I have an A1 author's amendment if you'd be so kind as to allow me to move it.
Please.
I'll move the A1 to get the bill in the shape that I would like for discussion.
Any discussion to the amendment? Would you like to tell us about the amendment, Representative Long?
No, Madam Chair, it's just to get the bill in the shape of it.
Okay. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Long, would you like to tell us about your bill?
I'd be happy to. Solar Rewards has been a bipartisan and broadly supported program. It provides 10 years of annual incentive payments based on the solar energy system's annual production. We recently extended Solar Rewards, but it has remained incredibly popular with residential and commercial customers. This bill would extend Solar Rewards for another 2 years through 2026 at $10 million per year, the current rate that we have it at right now. The bill would also create a new and parallel storage rewards program. We had a great storage hearing just a few weeks ago. The program would provide lump sum grants for storage systems under 50 kilowatt hours, and it would make a one-time appropriation of $10 million for this purpose. We heard in our storage day about the many benefits of storage, including load shifting to help move load away from peaks. If integrated with smart technology, this could be aggregated even as a backup power source for utilities. With time of day rates, it can reduce costs to consumers, and this can also allow for resiliency for local customers in the event of an outage. So there's a lot of innovation possible with storage, but the market is just getting started in Minnesota, so this will give it a needed boost. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd love to turn it over to my three testifiers.
Great, thank you. First up, we have Logan O'Grady, Executive Director from MNSEA. Can you please introduce yourself to the committee and provide your testimony?
Well, good morning again, Madam Chair, and I apologize to all the members of the committee who have to see me multiple times today. Logan O'Grady, Executive Director of MNSEA. Thank you, Chair Long, for your support of our industry and the extension of solar rewards in this bill. I also need to take a moment to thank MNSEA member Xcel Energy for their diligent work in administering the Solar Rewards program since 2010 and for being another great partner to our industry. Should be noted that Xcel is Minnesota's utility doing the most for our industry right now through increased commitments to solar in their integrated resource plan. So thank you, Xcel. Since its inception, Solar Rewards has helped install over 3,000 residential and commercial installs on properties. Due to the success of this program, MNSEA encourages the legislature to take the same approach to energy storage. As Representative Long mentioned, this bill would do that. By deploying energy storage, we'll build a grid of the 21st century here. This grid will be more reliable, more resilient, and more secure. Today, you'll hear from two of MNSEA's members who have used Solar Rewards to grow and create jobs. And the next logical step for these companies is to start installing solar or storage. So I would defer to my members, Madam Chair, that are here, and I'll stick around for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. O'Grady. Next up, we have Michael Allen, President of All Energy Solar. Please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Long and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to share our story with you today. My name is Michael Allen. I'm the CEO of St. Paul-based All Energy Solar. Our organization was started by my brother and I 12 years ago. Every year, we've organically grown our business, and I'm proud to share that we currently employ over 200 people and are currently expanding our organization by an additional 72 people in 2022. As of yesterday, we hired our 32nd new employee this year in 2022. Our goal is to hire an additional 40 open roles before the end of the third quarter. To clarify, these are not temporary jobs that we're hiring for a single project. These are full-time project managers, designers, engineers, and accountants. The purpose of sharing this is to remember that clean energy policy and funding provides jobs, something that I think we all can get behind. In addition to creating new jobs, I wanted to share some of the economic activity that is generated by providing a clear, concise funding roadmap between our company and the other 20 local solar companies that I can think of. We will generate hundreds of millions of dollars of local Minnesota economic stimulus. Here's a good way to think of it. The average rebate check that a Solar Rewards currently pays out annually is approximately $320. That project, once that customer then signs up, that project then gets designed by a local graduate of the University of Minnesota Architecture Program. The management of that project is then done by a local Minnesotan. A significant amount of the material for that project is purchased from local Minnesota companies, which is then installed by our local Minnesota tradespeople. Then once everything's complete, our local Minnesotan that has installed solar gets to save $10, $20, $30, or $100 a month on their electric bill. They then recirculate that money back into our local economy. All of this activity is generated via small rebate that Solar Rewards provides. Another area that I thought would be helpful to explain is how we've gradually decreased the amount of rebate that each customer gets. 4 years ago, a residential customer received a rebate of approximately 8 cents. 3 years ago, we decreased that to 7 cents. And now today, the residential consumer that signs up for Solar Rewards gets 4 cents. In just a few years, we've decreased the amount that any individual would receive by half. And in addition to that, 10 to 20% of the total Solar Rewards funds are now set aside for income qualified candidates. We plan to continue on that path and of lowering the cost barriers of going solar while also providing local, resilient, clean energy solutions for Minnesotans. With that, thank you for the opportunity. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. And next up, we have Donna Pickard, Solar Permissions Manager with True North Solar. Please introduce yourself to the committee and provide your testimony. Sorry.
Good morning, and thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to share a few thoughts on these upcoming solar-related bills. For the record, my name is Donna Pickard, and I serve as Permissions Manager at True North Solar. I've been in the solar industry for 12 years and have personally managed the completion of hundreds of interconnection applications across Minnesota. True North is a licensed electrical and building contractor that has gone from 2 to 24 employees since we opened our doors in 2010. We're located in Arden Hills, serving all of Minnesota. True North has installed hundreds of solar systems for cities, school districts, utilities, small and large businesses, and many, many residential homeowners. 2 years ago, True North testified how the future of the labor force is the single most challenging hurdle to growth in our industry. Today, I only add many challenges to that list because the labor market has not improved. But since that testimony, we've battled a global pandemic, seen high inflation, and experienced disruptive supply chain issues. When the design of Solar Rewards a few years ago included a ramp down and even an ending of the Solar Rewards incentive, we assumed that the cost to install solar would decrease and that incentive would no longer be necessary. But due to the challenges I mentioned that none of us predicted, the cost to install solar has not gone down for True North Solar in the last 2 years, but the costs have actually gone up. Two things that have stayed constant through all of these challenges is our commitment to a clean energy future and the support that we receive from the Solar Rewards program. The industry has helped the utility to price the incentives so that many more customers can participate and thereby allowing us to grow, to hire more employees, and to stay in business. We still need an incentive for a few more years to help customers say yes to clean energy so that we can say yes to those seeking employment with us. Thank you, and I will be available for questions.
Thank you to all of our testifiers, and now we will turn to discussion on the bill. Representative Swazinski, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question for, I believe it was boy, I forgot the name now. He's one of the first guys that spoke. He was a developer, had a TV in the background. But my question to him, he might know who he is, sorry. But he talked a lot about how is it his organic growth from his business, how's it's grown quite a bit organically. Just wanted to chat, would just kind of in general, do you feel if this just went away as it's planned in current law, would the solar market collapse in Minnesota?
I believe this question was directed toward Mr. Allen. Did you? Yes. It was a little bit hard to hear you, Mr. or Representative Swazinski, but I think
Better.
It is a little better.
Okay. All right. I'll speak. Might apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Were you able to hear the question?
No, I wasn't.
Oh, here, sorry. Madam Chair, I'll repeat it. Just you spoke a bit about how your business is growing so organically and the rest, and just wanted to visit with you about if it went away under current law, the solar rewards program, do you believe solar would collapse in Minnesota as far as installation?
Do I believe that the solar industry would collapse? No, I don't believe that the solar industry would collapse with the going away of a program like this. But I also don't believe that it's necessary to have such a small amount of funding being taken away from people. And it's doing exactly what it's meant to do, which is provide a small incentive for people to make a pretty significant decision to go clean, to add clean energy. So would it be a collapse? No. Would it be a significant step backwards for the industry and for the state of Minnesota reaching our clean energy goals? Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Representative Swazinski, did you have anything else?
Yes, and just to any of the developers, roughly what percentage of the projects that you're currently put in would not happen? Like, would it be 2%, 1%, none? Like, it wouldn't make a difference? Like, how many people are actually making the decision whether or not this gives them money, or whether or not they do the project?
Mr. Allen.
That's a really good question. I don't know the answer to that. That I think we'd probably have to do some polling to our consumers and see to what extent the incentive provides enough of a incentive for them to go solar. I think it would be a pretty significant percentage that would drop off. This essentially is also a sign that the state is not supporting something, which I think at this point we need to continue to support our consumers to help our clean energy goals as a state. So, but it's a good question. I'd be happy to work with you, Representative Swazinski, to consider doing a poll of our consumers and other consumers. Incentives are created for a reason, and it's basic economics. These are the things that help spur innovation and spur programs like this. And I think that, as I mentioned, the program is half of what the incentive was just a few years ago, and the program is still working. So I encourage us to expand the program and to continue to decrease the amount of money that each consumer receives, so that we can decrease it to the point where customers are comfortable making a decision to go solar with or without the incentive.
Thank you, Mr. Allen.
Then just a final follow-up to the carrier of the bill, to Representative Long.
Go ahead, Representative Swazinski.
Thank you. Representative Long, it was talked about in the last bill, the Ryer bill, on prevailing wage, because state dollars are going to cities to build solar on the top of their buildings, that it was felt that because there's state dollars going there, would you support an amendment on this bill to do the same if you receive state dollars from the solar reward program for prevailing wage for these projects?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I absolutely would, Representative Swazinski, and I was a little disheartened to hear you speak negatively of prevailing wage on the previous bill and imply that the added costs were not worth doing. I think that paying people a fair wage is absolutely worth doing.
Mr. Chair, my I didn't say it wasn't worth it. I just was asking, in other programs, we've heard from testifiers that when a city or a group receives a grant, oftentimes the prevailing wage requirement doesn't, it only covers the cost of the increased cost. So it wasn't like saying yes or no. I'm just saying that's the realities of when you ask that, oftentimes any cost savings that could have been done are negated by the addition of that language. So,
Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So I just have a quick question. This came, somebody texted this to me from the outside. So the question that this gentleman raised is, how many solar panels would you need to keep up with the direct current charging station, if anybody has that answer?
Representative Long, did you understand that question?
I can repeat it.
I heard the question, but no, I don't understand the meaning. I'm sorry.
So how many solar panels would it take? So you don't know. Well, if you could find out, that'd be great. Thank you. Oh, Mr. Allen knows.
Mr. Allen, go ahead, please.
I'm not sure that the question is a full question. In order to tell you how many solar panels, I think you need to tell us what the load is. So just a direct current doesn't give us that information. You have to tell us, ask us what you're trying to charge.
Representative Franzen.
That's the question. He wasn't sure how many solar panels would work at night that would help the charging station. So I'm just relaying a question from the outside. Thanks.
Well, I think one of the things that can help load at night is the storage component of this bill, and that can help store energy that's gone during the day and transfer that tonight. So seeing no further questions or comments, Representative Long, would you like to have any final comments about your bill?
I did see Representative Holland's hand pop up. I don't know if she.
Oh, I missed it. I'm so sorry. Representative Hollins, go ahead.
No, it's okay. I thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Chair Long. I just wanted to say that I am a big supporter and a big fan of this bill. And I think with, you know, $20 billion annually going to fossil fuel subsidies, that having some incentives involved in our solar programs is not a bad thing. So thank you so much for bringing this. We really appreciate it.
My apologies for not seeing your hand, Representative Hollins. Representative Long, any final comments?
Well, I hate to disagree with Representative Hollins, but it's $120 billion that goes to fossil fuel companies annually at the federal level. So, yes, there's and those are not subsidies that need to be renewed. Those have been baked into our tax code for many decades. So I appreciate the discussion, members, and look forward to hopefully the chair will consider this bill favorably and the omnibus.
Representative Long renews his motion that House File 4402 be laid over, and the bill is laid over. The third bill that we have on the agenda is House File 4305. Representative Long, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would like to move that House File 4305 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
All right, Representative Long, would you like to tell us about your bill?
I would be happy to. So in Minnesota, we have a solar energy production tax, and this tax applies to solar energy generating systems that are larger than 1 megawatt in size. So we need then to define what is a 1 megawatt solar project. And we have found that there is a need for clarity about when solar developments are single developments or when they are separate developments. Under the Public Utility Commission orders from 2015, Xcel Energy reached an agreement with solar developers to limit the size of community solar gardens to 1 megawatt or less, and spelled out in its order how to determine the size of a 1 megawatt community solar garden. So this bill cleans up the ambiguity in current state statute, which has raised different interpretations of what a 1 megawatt installation is, and is causing challenges for solar developers and investors in Minnesota. We would use the definition that has been widely understood from the Public Utilities Commission and that has worked well for the community solar projects and for Xcel Energy. With that, I'll turn it over to the three testifiers we have.
Thank you, Representative Long. And it looks like we are ready to welcome back Logan O'Grady with Mencia. Please introduce yourself for the record and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, members of the committee, Logan O'Grady, Executive Director of Mencia. I'll be very quick. Thank you, Chair Long, for bringing this clarification bill forward. Currently, Mencia members are receiving two different interpretations of a rule from two different state agencies. This clears that up and provides clear guidance for our member companies, as well as new companies that we are trying to encourage to do business in Minnesota. They have a clear path. So thank you again. I know we have some members here, and I'll stick around for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. O'Grady. Next, we have Daniel Willingham, Tax Counsel with Renewable Energy Alternatives. Please introduce yourself for the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Daniel Willingham, and I am Tax Counsel for Renewable Energy Alternatives based in Missouri, which is now investing in and developing community solar gardens in Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Representative Long's HF 4305. Minnesota's solar energy production tax is established in Minnesota Statute 272.0295 and only applies to solar energy generating systems that are larger than 1 megawatt in size, is stated very clearly in the statute. Solar energy generating systems that are 1 megawatt or smaller community solar gardens, or CSGs, are clearly exempt from the solar energy production tax under subdivision 3B of that statute, The problem that exists with the solar energy production statute today is that its language is ambiguous and it does not take into account an order of the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission, the PUC, in docket number E002/M-13-867, dated August 6, 2015. In that order, Xcel Energy reached an agreement with solar developers of CSGs to limit the size of CSGs to 1 megawatt or less, and also on how to determine whether a CSG is 1 megawatt or less. The purpose of this order is to ensure that a CSG does not exceed the 1 megawatt size limit before Xcel Energy executes an interconnection agreement for that CSG. As a result of the ambiguity in the current statute, the Department of Revenue uses an interpretation of the Solar Energy Production Tax Statute in determining the size of solar projects that is in clear conflict with the way the Department of Commerce interprets the statute. The DOC appropriately considers the PUC order adopted on August 6, 2015 that I previously referenced. This statutory ambiguity and differing interpretations by two different state agencies is causing serious regulatory problems for solar developers and investors in Minnesota. These problems cause unnecessary and inefficient challenges for developers who are currently doing business in Minnesota and those who want to bring the benefits of clean energy and economic growth in the form of development, capital, and jobs to Minnesota. In order to promote the benefits of CSGs to treat developers fairly and to promote economic growth, we must adopt the following changes to Minnesota Statute 272.0295. First, ensure projects that Xcel Energy has approved for interconnection under the CSG program remain exempt from the solar energy production tax and from burdensome audits and time-consuming reviews related thereto. Second, issue a bright-line rule so that all stakeholders, including Xcel Energy, the DOR, the DOC, and developers, know upfront whether a project is exempt from the solar energy production tax and can carry out operations in accordance with that understanding. And third, eliminate confusion about which entity determines if a project is subject to the solar energy production tax. I can assure you that supporting HF 4305 will attract developers from across the country to grow the state's clean energy infrastructure and create jobs in Minnesota. In light of these circumstances, we ask for your support of HF 4305.
Thank you, Mr. Willingham. Next up, we have David Schaefer from Novel Energy Solutions. Go ahead and introduce yourself to the committee and present your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the House Climate and Energy Committee, my name is David Schaefer, and I'm the Director of Policy and Government Affairs at Novel Energy Solutions. Today, I'm here to ask you to support House File 4305. This bill clarifies that the Department of Revenue cannot tax solar arrays twice. The Minnesota Department of Revenue is assessing a production tax on community solar projects that are 1 megawatt in size, which is contrary to the current law. The reasoning revenue uses is that the projects, when taken with other projects nearby, exceed 1 megawatt in total. There are, in the eyes of revenue, co-located, and thus, when taken together, they're bigger than 1 megawatt. Now, this is a strange conclusion, given that for the purposes of the program, the projects are deemed to be not co-located by default, by Xcel Energy, by the Department of Commerce, and or by the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. You see, in order for a project to get built and to receive the value of solar rate, the community solar gardens must not be co-located. The PUC has developed a robust array of what is essentially case law on what are and what are not impermissibly co-located projects. Developers have relied on this body of law to determine where and how to build specifically not be co-located for the purposes of the program. So it's surprising that the Department of Revenue would assess a tax as if the projects are co-located when other state agencies and the program host utility have already said directly or implicitly that the projects are not co-located. Now, it might stand to reason that the agencies could have different definitions of co-location, but back in 2015, when the commission was determining how it wanted to handle co-location, the idea was put forward to simply borrow from the production tax statute to ensure consistency. That way, projects that were liable to pay the tax would either be considered co-located for the purposes of the CSG program and vice versa. Today, the Minnesota Department of Revenue is still seeking to assess the tax on garden owners in the face of this historical context. When confronted with the tax, owners can appeal the tax to the Department of Commerce, and to my knowledge, the department has yet to side against the owners, but this is a hassle, which is why we're here today. I know some owners who were not aware of this historical context or did not know they could fight it, and they simply gave up and paid the tax. I assume these occasional payments are the incentive for revenue to assess this tax in the first place. It's really all upside for them. I'd like to conclude with one final argument, which is there's a logical question, I think, of whether the garden should pay a tax in the first place. And the answer is they are already liable to be taxed through the property improvement, the same way a commercial array is. CSGs are a way for residential subscribers and businesses to participate in solar, even if they rent, have bad roofs, or otherwise cannot put solar on their site. You can net meter on a commercial building up to 1 megawatt in Xcel service territory. The tax system for community solar was designed to treat 1 megawatt CSGs the same way, since they're supposed to be an equal alternative to putting solar on one's roof. We're just looking for that equal treatment, which was originally contemplated to be realized in the world today. So we are willing to pay taxes, but we're not interested in paying taxes on the land improvement and on the revenue from the energy, and this bill ensures the revenue's practices will cease. So with those reasons in mind, we ask for your support of House File 4305. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schaefer, and all of our testifiers. I will now move to questions and discussion. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this question is to Mr. Wellingham. Under what circumstance do you feel like if this bill moves forward, will that result in more community solar arrays being built or the other direction?
Go ahead, Mr. Willingham.
If this bill moves forward, I see there being more interest in community solar gardens because the regulatory guidance surrounding them is more clear, and all parties know what they're getting at the outset of developing a project.
Representative Swazinski.
And this question would maybe go to Mr. Schaefer. If the state, you know, we're trying to get some clarifying language in this bill, wouldn't just a ban on co-location also solve this potentially?
Mr. Schaefer.
Representative Swazinski, there already is a ban on co-location. You can't put two gardens right next to each other if they're developed at the same time. The point is that projects that aren't co-located are being treated as if they are, even like they can be miles and miles and miles away from each other. And as long as they're still in the distribution system, revenues trying to assess this tax. So from our perspective, one of the challenges here is that we've sold projects that we had no reason to believe were co-located. And then suddenly the people we've sold it to are getting taxed. And then that's a good example of REA who's here today.
Any follow-up, Representative Swazinski?
And just a general question. To the body, you know, if this bill would increase prescribing to the solar reward or the community solar program. I would say maybe we shouldn't. It always already seems like we have a plethora of these out in our countryside. It's from what I've heard and learned, this is probably one of the most expensive solar in the country. And you know, just to respect ratepayers and respect the higher rising costs of electricity that's being bore on ratepayers' backs, that maybe we should be looking to limit the growth of this program because of its exceptionally record-breaking high cost. So that's just my two cents. Thank you.
Representative Long, would you like to comment?
Yes, please, Madam Chair. I'll just respond, Representative Swazinski. We can have policy debates around the community solar program, but I don't think that putting out regulatory uncertainty and increased tax on businesses should probably be the Republican position for what we want to do to limit the program. We're just trying to fix a problem, which is that for projects that have been built, there are disagreements about how the tax should be applied. So we're not necessarily even talking about future projects. We're talking about existing projects and how we are assessing those. And I think regulatory certainty and fairness and taxation should be goals we all share.
Representative Mecklen, did you have a question?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. This might be for either Chair Long or Mr. Schaefer, because I don't see anybody on here from Excel, but Mr. Schaefer made a statement that, you know, they're getting taxed on the increase because they're converting the land to something different, so the property taxes change, and then they're getting taxed again. And I haven't seen anybody from Excel on here, but can somebody answer me if Excel pays an increased real estate tax, property tax, because they have a generating plant, and then they also pay a tax on the power they generate? Can somebody answer that question for me?
Mr. Schaefer, do you have any information about that, or is that something we could, or Mr. O'Grady, or we could get information from Excel and get back to you? Either of you have a response? Mr. Schaefer, I see you unmuted.
Madam Chair, I'm muted to say I don't really know. I would guess that Excel doesn't pay a tax on energy that they sell to customers, but perhaps the customers pay that tax. But I don't know. I'd have to defer to Mr. Evans or Mr. Pearson.
I think maybe what we could do is reach out to Excel and get some information about that and get back to the committee.
Well,
did you have any follow-up, Mr. Mecklen, or Representative Mecklen?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I've actually had a lot of meetings with Excel, as many of us have. But I'm also, you know, Chair Long made a good point that we don't want duplicate taxes on any of our businesses. And so I'm actually glad to hear that we're actually all together fighting to reduce the taxes on our businesses. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment, Representative Mecklen. Seeing no further questions, Representative Long, would you like any final comments on your bill?
Sure. Thank you, Representative Akam. So I think this bill, members, is really a technical bill, right? We're trying to fix a challenge in terms of how we're applying the tax code. And as I mentioned, this is about trying to help provide regulatory certainty and to enshrine a definition that's been widely accepted about when projects are co-located and when they're not. So I think this should be non-controversial, and I would ask for member support.
Representative Long renews his motion that House File 4305 be re-referred to the committee, to the Committee on Taxes, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Long.
Aye.
Vice Chair Akam.
Aye.
Minority Leader Swazinski.
No.
Representative Bierman.
Bierman, aye.
Representative Bo.
Bo votes aye.
Representative Christensen.
Aye.
Representative Franson.
No.
Representative Grunhagen.
No.
Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Hornstein.
Aye.
Representative Igo.
I don't know.
Representative Lee.
Aye. Yeah.
Representative Lippertz.
Lippert, aye.
Representative Liz Lagarde.
Aye.
Representative Mecklen.
Mecklen, no.
Representative Munson.
No.
Representative Stevenson. Representative Stevenson.
There being 10 ayes and 6 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is re-referred to tax. With that, I will turn the gavel back over to Chair Long.
Thank you so much. Our final bill on the agenda for today is House File 3897 from Representative Hollins. Would you care to move your bill, Representative Hollins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would like to move my bill, please.
Representative Hollins moves House File 3897 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Hollins, you have a DE1 author's amendment. Would you care to move your author's amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, so moved.
Would you like to make any comments to your author's amendment?
This just really gets it into the shape that we want it to be heard in.
Representative Hollins moves the DE1 to get the bill in the shape she would like. Any discussion to the DE1? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The DE1 is adopted. Please tell us about your bill, Representative Hollins.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. This bill is actually pretty simple. It seeks to help residents transition to more electrification by providing grants to upgrade their electrical panels. So I don't know if you can see behind me, but I live in a home that was built about 100 years ago. And the houses that were built then were definitely not made with the electrical appliances that we now have access to in mind. And so there are a great need. There's a great need to update electrical panels in a lot of the homes in the state of Minnesota. This bill was written with the goal of assisting first and foremost those who are low income individuals or families. And specifically those for whom $3,000 to $10,000 upgrade is simply unthinkable. We recognize that not only are those households the least likely to actually, you know, put the money out and pay for an upgrade, but they're also the ones that are most likely to be exposed to the indoor air pollution from gas appliances. And so therefore the most needing to have those electrical upgrades done. That being said, we also wanted to offer an incentive to households that are living above the poverty line and have included grant guidelines for those folks as well. And finally, I just wanted to note that we are continuing conversations with a number of stakeholders and still working on tightening up the language to meet the needs of all involved. But that being said, I think this is a great start and it really showcases innovative thinking about a difficult issue. I have several testifiers here today to explain the bill and their potential effects.
Yes, this is Mary Mechanical Parts. How are you?
Representative Fanson, could you, thank you. Go ahead, Representative Hollins.
I just said I have several testifiers here today, and I will turn my time over to them.
Thank you so much. First, we will hear from Justin Fay. Welcome back to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and good morning to members of the committee. My name is Justin Fay. I'm here on behalf of Fresh Energy, and I'm joined today by my colleague, Mari Ojeda, who will introduce herself in just a moment. Fresh Energy is a 30-year-old Minnesota-based nonpartisan nonprofit organization that works to achieve equitable carbon-neutral economies. We appreciate the opportunity to be here today to speak in support of House File 3897, and first, especially want to thank Representative Hollins for bringing this bill forward. Minnesota's energy transition is well underway. While the threat of climate change continues to grow and progress, emerging technologies offer the potential to eliminate emissions while delivering a host of additional benefits from safety to efficiency to performance. However, what we need from policymakers now is to carefully consider how to address barriers that exist for Minnesotans hoping to participate in the market for products ranging from heating and cooling to cooking to transportation. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to my colleague, Ms. Ojeda.
Ms. Mari Ojeda, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mari Ojeda. I'm a policy associate on the Energy Access and Equity team at Fresh Energy. House File 3897 establishes a pilot grant program to mitigate the cost of upgrading electric panels and related wiring to prepare households for expanded electrification. Adequate electrical capacity is a barrier to residential electrification and electric vehicle expansion. We recognize that there may be unexpected costs of an electric panel upgrade when a homeowner decides to switch out a fossil fuel appliance to an electric one, or when they add an EV charger in their garage. We're hoping to alleviate that extra cost that may become a barrier for folks transitioning to cleaner energy sources. And we also recognize that this is an opportunity to preserve existing housing stock and address any safety issues that may be present in some homes' existing electrical service equipment. This program serves under-resourced residents of the state first in order to eliminate the financial barriers that they would likely face as they upgrade their homes, appliances, and equipment. It's important to acknowledge the hidden and disproportionate barriers an under-resourced household in particular would experience in this energy transition if we're not proactive about reducing barriers now. And further, establishing this program would preserve our state's existing housing stock while addressing any potential health and safety concerns that may exist for older electrical panels and wiring in homes. Some electrical issues that contribute to deferrals for weatherization measures could also be addressed within this program. Another benefit from this program is job creation for people in the electrical industry. As our energy transition continues to accelerate, demand for electricians and related skilled professionals will only increase. A program like this can help jumpstart building the skilled labor force that we're going to need in the future. And for all these reasons, we support this grant program that proactively invests in Minnesotans as we prepare for the clean energy transition. A simple but very essential first step is ensuring that electric panels are upgraded so that they're ready for future electrification measures. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and we're available to take questions.
Thank you so much, Ms. Ojeda. Next, we will hear from Jamal Lewis with Rewiring America. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the committee for the opportunity to provide testimony. And thank you, Representative Hollins, for sponsoring this important bill. My name is Jamal Lewis, and I'm the Director of Policy for Rewiring America. We are a national organization dedicated to economy-wide electrification. We strongly urge you all to support this bill to provide resources for panel upgrades, a key piece of the building electrification puzzle. To limit warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, we must eliminate as much of our emissions as possible. Fortunately, 42% of our nation's energy-related emissions can be traced back to the decisions that we make at our kitchen tables. Decisions about the machines that cook our food, drive us to work, and heat and cool our homes. Because of the long lives of these machines, up to 25 years, these decision points do not occur frequently. In fact, these decisions are typically made in emergencies when one of these machines, like a furnace, breaks. It is at this point where we need to electrify. Unfortunately, many homes are equipped with outdated circuit panels that cannot handle the extra electrical load that modern machines require. These circuit panels need to be upgraded. Panel upgrades can be prohibitively expensive, particularly for lower income households. The resources provided by this bill will enable Minnesotans the opportunity to choose clean, efficient electric home appliances when it comes time for replacement. According to the Energy Information Agency, the proportion of all electric homes in every region of the country has steadily increased since 2005. Rooftop solar and electric vehicles have experienced similar increases. The problem is that these technologies have been adopted mostly by wealthier households that have the means not only to purchase the technology, but to also upgrade their electrical panels to handle the additional load. As more consumers leave the gas system, the remaining customers will be stuck holding the bill. And if we're not careful, these remaining customers could be largely low and moderate income households, many of whom are already severely energy cost burdened. This bill is a key step to equitable building electrification, and I urge you to support it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Lewis. And finally, we're going to hear from Mike Robertson with Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Long. My name is Mike Robertson. I am the Brush with Kindness Program Manager at Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity. Thank you, Chair Long and Representative Hollins and members of the committee. The mission of Twin Cities Habitat is to bring people together to create, preserve, and promote affordable homeownership and to advance racial equity in housing. Our home repair program, which I manage, is called A Brush with Kindness, and it helps specifically low-income homeowners to maintain safe and stable homes. The vast majority of our homeowners make 30% of the metro area median income or less. Many of them are older adults living on fixed income. Some are families struggling with physical or mental disabilities, and some are military veterans. In every single case, the home that they are living in is their largest asset and their most affordable housing option. As our work at Twin Cities Habitat and other developers evolves to include electrification and decarbonization, the bill under consideration is really the right kind of resource at the right time to help us and other housing organizations leverage the value of the solid existing housing stock we have and to pave the way for electrical improvement that not only benefits the environment, but also addresses a major and recurring health and safety issue for the homeowner. I'm going to tell just a brief story about one homeowner of the dozens that I've worked with in the past that have had an issue like this. Patricia is an African-American homeowner who's lived in the North Minneapolis Jordan neighborhood for over 30 years. Her home is immaculate inside and out, but she contacted us because as an older adult, she needs some accessibility modifications. And she also mentioned that she was having some electrical issues and kept blowing fuses. So when I went out to assess the property, the electrical panel that she had was in fact a box from probably the 1930s that had four fuses in it, the old screw-in type fuses. She could not run her refrigerator and any other appliance at the same time in her house. She had to run her toaster, she had to unplug her refrigerator. So it was clear that the circuits in her house were simply overloaded and unsafe. A typical panel upgrade, as folks previous testifiers have mentioned, to 200 amp service has cost between $2,000 and $3,000 in the past. But in this particular case, because the service was so old, it needed a new mast and it needed a new bypass meter socket. And so that pushed the cost well over $5,000. So we were able to do that work. And not only is Pat's home much safer, but removing the barrier of pre-electrification, she can now more easily take advantage of clean, highly efficient green technologies like rooftop solar, air source heat pumps for heating, cooling, and water heating. These improvements will be good for Pat's monthly expenses, the indoor air quality of her home, and good for the environment. It's in our best interest to ensure that statewide resources available to support homeowners transitioning to the clean energy economy are adequate to meet the need. So grants like the one proposed support that move towards a decarbonized economy, support affordable homeownership, support affordable housing stock, support local trade contractors and housing organizations, and most importantly, support health, safety, and stability of homeowners. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Robertson. Looks like we have a few questions, so we will begin with Representative Grunhagen.
I'll pass, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a few questions for the author of the bill, if that would be okay.
Of course.
In the bill, I think it's on 2.19. It talks about, you know, a 200 amp panel. I believe it's where it is. I could be wrong. No, I'm sorry, 2.8 and 2.9. Is there any consideration if the supply line going between the nearest transmission line and the property, if that is not capable of handling the amount of power that you're going to be bringing into the home? And has that been factored into the cost allocation of what these grants can cover?
Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Mecklen. That's a great question. I'm going to pass to one of my testifiers who is more savvy about the technical aspects of this, of the electrification.
Looks like Ms. Ojeda would like to comment. Ms. Ojeda.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative. Yes, it has been factored into the costs here.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my next one is, you know, we talk about rewiring, and to Representative Hollins, I've actually worked on a lot of those old homes, so I'm very familiar with knob and tube and lath and plaster and all these different things that occur in these older homes. But in order to replace some of that really, really old wiring, are you factoring into this cost of the cost of like removing and replacing wall covering, as well as once you open that wall and what you may find for insulation that could be actually not so good and may require remediation? Is all of that factored in? Because currently this is a pretty expensive process. So I'm curious if you factored that into this bill.
Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I think that's a fair question, and we have attempted to factor that in. If you look at the amount that we are setting aside for, you know, the amount that we are granting, we have gone above and beyond, I think, and granted, we are still trying to get clarity on how much it would cost to do these sorts of replacements. We've been cited a number, a huge range of what it costs to do these upgrades. But because of that, we really have said the maximum amount that we're willing to put in there is higher than what we anticipate most of the upgrades would be, specifically because of those very concerns that you have. And I don't know if any of my testifiers want to add to that.
Looks like they think you got it.
All right.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Chair Long. So, okay. I guess by in reading through this, and I mean, some of the previous bills we've heard today, who's eligible to do this work under this grant program, or who's required to do this work? I mean, as the contractor side, who, is there any requirements of who can do this work?
Representative Hollins, you want to take that, or is there somebody you'd like to defer to?
My understanding is that. I mean, it has to be, that's one of the things that we are tightening up language-wise was where it says contractor, putting in specifically the electrical, you know, a licensed electrical contractor. I think Mari might have additional information on that because I know that was something they were talking about.
Ms. Ojeda.
Thank you, Chair Long. Representative Hollins just answered exactly what I was going to say. So licensed electrical contractor.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Chair Long. So you are not going to require prevailing wage on this program? Is that correct?
Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is correct. At this point, we are not requiring prevailing wage. We've been in touch with we've been in touch with the electrical unions and have talked to them about this. I think because of the requirements for prevailing wage and how we would ensure that that was actually happening, because some of these grants can be directly given to the homeowner. It would be then kind of onerous for the homeowners to check and make sure that they are meeting that standard. And so because of that, we thought that it just doesn't make a lot of sense to do it in that particular way.
Representative.
This gets more interesting by the minute. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before, a prevailing wage was really important in a livable wage, but on this one, it's not. I can easily provide a lengthy list of union contractors in the electrical world. My next question, however, is because this is a cost barrier, we've heard that many times today. And yes, I as a general contractor, I've hired many electricians to replace panels, especially Federal Pacific, because they're very dangerous. But if they can't afford the dollars to replace a panel, and I haven't done one in the last year or two, so I'm sure it's gone up, but, you know, it's probably just the panel alone is probably three, maybe a little bit more, 1,000 now. But if we're going to be putting in outlets for charging stations for electric vehicles, if they can't afford the $3,000-ish dollars, how do they afford electrical vehicle?
Representative Hall.
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Mecklen. I think that's a really fair question, and that's why it is optional. So this is something that we saw as potentially something that someone might want to do, and especially given that it might not be necessarily the homeowner, but it would be the homeowner, but, you know, maybe there's somebody who's renting who the homeowner is interested in upgrading that particular home to make it more accessible to those things for renters in the future, to make it, more appealing for future renters. But I mean, it's entirely optional whether or not they want an EV charging station. That's not something that we're requiring people to do. And if they don't want it, then they don't need to do it.
I'll just note also this pairs nicely with Representative Stevenson's bill, which would provide grants for rent for a used vehicles and has adjusted grant amounts based on income. Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Chair Long. Well, you know, maybe Representative Hollins would like to reach out. I mean, I have done this for many, many years. I've done a tremendous amount of removing and replacing wall covering to expose the utility or the mechanicals. And I do see a lot of holes in this thing right now and a lot of expense that I don't think people understand how expensive it is. I'm currently working on a project which I think it would greatly exceed this amount, which is pretty much exposing all the mechanicals. And it is significantly higher than what you're allowing in this bill. So if she would like to reach out, I'd be more than happy to share my information with her or my knowledge. Thank you.
Sounds like a good coffee follow-up. Representative Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hollins, for bringing forward this bill. I think we all have seen, or we heard earlier when Mr. Lewis talked about houses and how much they cause toward emissions. And so putting forward a bill like this to be intended to be proactive, to have people be ready for the time when they have the emergency and their hot water heater goes out or one of their appliances fail, and allows them to be prepared for that so they can transition to an electric appliance or of their choosing. And what I also appreciate is that this isn't prescriptive on what it needs to be, but allows flexibility. And so it may be that one homeowner wants an electric car charger, and it may be that somebody else wants an electric heat pump. And so I appreciate the proactive nature and the flexibility and the fact that it's really intending also to make homes safer for people. So I appreciate the work going into this bill, and thank you for my comment. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Akam. Representative Swasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just kind of a follow-up question. Does it affect I know you said you want to focus this on lower income people. You know, obviously we all have accountants, but you could have a low income, but a property that's worth a lot of money. Is there values, you know, you could essentially have a qualifying income, but have a $1 million home. Is that your intent, or could we potentially change this so that it is actually getting after poor people, not just on paper poor people?
Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Swasinski. I don't think I quite understand the question. The measure that we have to identify low-income individuals is the same measure that we are using, I believe, in the weatherization bill. So it's really about, income and poverty level. And I will note, for those people who do have houses that are worth $1 million, a lot of those people who are low-income are losing those houses because they're not able to keep up with the inflation on their property taxes. I have a number of those individuals in my district who are complaining to me. So I don't think that we have a huge overlap of people who are like rich in assets but poor on paper. And I don't expect that there are going to be a lot of those, like maybe, I don't know, trust fund individuals who don't have a job but want to apply for this. I think that we've really kind of narrowly tailored it. So the people who are applying are people who actually, need the assistance.
Thank you.
Representative Swasinski.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. Your comment kind of sparked another question. You talked about, property value as well. Changing, rewiring a home, upgrading the service will definitely help with the sale of a value. Let's say the state puts in $10,000 into a home, and the person, we understand maybe 15 years later they sell the home, but what if they sell it within like 2 years and they get to appreciate that $10,000 in home value when it's sold? Is there any clawback measures because the hardworking taxpayers' dollars went into that home that they would get their money back essentially on the sale of that home?
Representative Hollins.
We certainly haven't considered anything like that. That's an interesting, I'm sorry. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. We haven't considered anything like that. It's an interesting proposition. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to put anything in place that says like you're not allowed to move or sell this home within a certain amount of time without some sort of penalty. But, I'll ask my testifiers at Fresh Energy or even potentially at Habitat for Humanity if they have any thoughts on that in particular.
Mr. Robertson.
Yes, thank you, Representative Hollins. Thank you, Chair. One method that we've used in the past is a deferred forgivable mortgage to secure projects. So we file a mortgage with the county for the value of any work that we do on the home, and it decreases over time. So it decreases 1/10 over a 10-year period. And so after 10 years, the person would not owe us anything back. But if they sold after 2 years, as the representative had mentioned, then only 2 years of the deferred mortgage would have amortized, so they would pay us back 80% of what was left. So let's say it's a $10,000 mortgage. 2 years in, when they went to close on the house, that second mortgage on their home would be satisfied upon closing. So there are models out there that don't penalize the homeowner or don't cost burden them any further, but that protect the investment that we're making with taxpayer or program dollars.
Representative Swazinski, we're out of time. So if you have additional questions, you can follow up with the author later. Representative Hollins, would you like to make any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank my testifiers and thank the committee for this really interesting conversation. And I look forward to answering any additional questions that folks might have. Please feel free to reach out to me.
Thank you, Representative Hollins, for bringing this important bill forward for conversation. And I'll just note, too, that a lot of the low-income homes that we're talking about are at increased risk from gas pollution indoors because they don't have good ventilation systems. And so when we're thinking about really old stoves, those often come with poor ventilation. And so that's, I know, putting a lot of kids at risk of increased asthma as well. So I want to thank the testifiers, thank Representative Hollins for bringing this bill forward. And with that, Representative Hollins renews her motion that House File 3897 be laid over for possible inclusion. The bill is laid over, and thank you, everyone. We are adjourned.